This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable. Changing their life forever so they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hi, I'm Dale Whelan, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Mike Vardy.
Welcome to A Productive Conversation. I'm Mike Vardy, and I'm joined by Dale Whelan today. Dale is the CEO of 4-Day Week Global, an organization working to trial the benefits of a 4-day work week on a global scale. Yes, we dive into that, and it's not as cut and dried as you might think. There's nuance involved. Spoke about nuance on a podcast episode not too long ago. You can find that by looking through the archives. But moving on to what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about the changing nature of work, how the pandemic has impacted productivity, and Dale's vision for creating more sustainable work cultures through reduced working hours. You're in for a treat. Here is my productive conversation with Dale Whelan here on A Productive Conversation. Dale, thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
So you are in Dublin. I am in Victoria. As we're kicking off this conversation today, it is early in the morning for me. It's about dinner time for you, as it makes about 8 hours difference. But no matter what, we all have days that we deal with, whether they happen, you know, for me as a night owl, my day typically starts later, it ends later. Your days may start early. Like, time is one of those things where we have, you know, kind of this objective rule that we can follow. You know, there's 24 hours in a day, et cetera, et cetera. For me and for you right now, it's Wednesday. In New Zealand, it'll be Thursday. So time is a really interesting thing. And yet, when we talk about the work week, it seems that it's been like, it's just as objective when it doesn't have to be. So right out of the gate, when I came across your work, the idea of the 4-day week, first off, I want to know the work week part is going to be interesting for me, but this idea of focusing on 4 days over five, can you share a little bit about what your role is with the organization and why this is such an important initiative, not just for you, but you believe on a global scale?
Yeah, so I'm CEO of 4-Day Week Global. We're a not-for-profit company that have been running global trials around the benefits of a 4-day week for people, for businesses, and for society. So the reason, I suppose, many of the conversations around a 4-day week are happening at the moment is as a result of trials that we have run in the US and Canada and Ireland, the UK and South Africa. And our aim, I suppose, as an organization is to try and run as much research as possible in a truly global context and understand what happens when we change, as you say, working time within organizations and within different cultures. Why is it an important intervention as such, and why is it an important intervention now? The idea of the 5-day week, you know, is over 100 years old now. And the world of work and the type of work we do has fundamentally changed over that 100 years. we look at that time, it was a very industrial, physically laborsome workforce. And now it's a highly cognitive and highly emotional workforce. Not only has that nature of work changed, but actually the parts of our body that we're using in work are also quite different. So you think about being able to, with our bodies and our muscles are able to withstand many hours doing repetitive, laborsome work. It's why farming is a 7-day work, profession. But we can't marry that in the type of work that we do today, which tends to be highly interactive with people, a lot of information to process, ever changing. And so it's really that mismarriage between our brain and having the ability to actually maintain attention for 7 to 8 hours across a 40-hour week. And despite the fact that, we might have been able to do that in a different type of work, we're not able to do that fundamentally and physiologically in this type of work that we're doing. So that is why reducing working hours is, we're making the business case that it's good for people, but also it's actually good for productivity as well, because when people are less tired and less burned out, they actually are able to do better work. And that's an issue now we're seeing happening, globally. The issue of burnout is just rising exponentially in the workforce. And that is not just bad for people, but having an impact on businesses' performance.
Did you find that COVID-19 kind of had a bit of a, I think initially it probably helped with the slowdown, people realizing that things, the world keeps spinning, even though, we're not working at the same pace. But I wonder, and I'd love to hear some thoughts on this, is the spinning back up of things accelerated that? Is it, it's almost like we were working at such a high level, again, in an objective way, as opposed to subjective, 5 days a week doing, like, as you pointed out, work that was never intended to necessarily be done that way. Not only that, but, not sustainable. Do you think that the spin up has been largely, we haven't been able to, basically it's like going from 0 to 100 again, as opposed to going from 80 to 100. So it's the, the frog you throw in the boiling water where you don't notice it. And then eventually as long as you're turning the water up slowly, that's what was happening. COVID-19, kind of the pandemic, stopped things. So the water was turned off. And this time what's happening is they've just turned the water completely on and then thrown everybody back in. And like, whoa, wait. Like, to me, that seems to be what I'm seeing happening across, just from dealing with people and stuff, that seems to be the case. So I'd love to hear it from the background of what you're doing with your organization.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really nice analogy, like the frog in the water. It seems like we went from a place where COVID affords us so many opportunities and benefits to show that actually we can work quite differently and we can have both good well-being and also good performance in work, and that's what a lot of that objective data was saying. Companies fundamentally looked at their processes, their culture, they figured out ways to make things work, and they did it really well in many instances. And for some reason, we have shifted back to old paradigms of working as we, the public health measures were reduced. And I think what we are facing now is this dissonance in the workforce that knows how to work well and management who are enforcing a policy of working that doesn't actually work for people. Right. So COVID made people, I suppose, collectively wake up to realize the world of work is not working for them. And there is a tension now between employers and employees that has fed into a much bigger thing than just the organization. Like, you are seeing people who are much more, people have moved out of cities, people bought homes in smaller communities who are now being expected to go back to the office 3 or 4 days a week. They're just not doing that. And so you're finding that tension now. And I think it's going to fail. I think business leaders who go with this, diehard approach of old archaic micromanagement structures are going to really struggle to recruit top talent. Equally, I think there is a lot of uncertainty for people right now in the world of work, because, as you say, the pace of work has increased so much over the last 12 to 24 months. It seems like it's all doom and gloom all the time. And we've kind of just become perpetually burned out now as a workforce. And we don't seem to be doing anything to help pull ourselves out of that rut. That's only we're kind of digging deeper into it.
You mentioned intervention when we were I said initiative, and then the idea of intervention. It's an interesting choice because, to your point about, you know, organizations spinning back up and saying, well, this is the way we did it before, so we're getting back to that, right? How do you go into a business that is, because that's where the rubber meets the road. It would have to be the businesses, right? How do you go into them and say, listen, you know, we realize that, you know, optically, this is why, you know, we like to see 5 days a week, you know, but then we get to performative work, which we see all the time anyways. People can get, you know, 8 hours of work done in 4 hours, and then they're just there for four additional hours, right? Or people who stretch out the 8 hours because they know that they can, and it drags down, you know, there's a whole bunch of different reasoning why that fails too. Whereas, you know, when you have a distributed workforce, or even when you're talking about saying, hey, listen, why don't we truncate the traditional work week down to 4 days? How do you go into a business with this intervention in mind? Because it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And what are some of the steps that you take?
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think we frame this as this is a productivity intervention for business leaders, because that's the language that's important for them. Mm-hmm. So we use our trademark principle of 180-100. So it's 100% pay, 80% time, but the outcome is 100%. And that was the way that many of our trials are set up, is that you're guaranteeing that productivity or output in your organization is not going to be compromised by your staff working less. And what we've often found in many instances is that actually you've had 110% or 120%, because we have essentially given the proof of concept that actually you can work differently and your staff can still perform as well, if not better. So they like numbers, you know, businesses are going to make their decisions based on risk of financials. And all of the evidence is trending towards higher recruitment costs, higher retention costs, presenteeism in the workforce, sick and absence leave, all these overheads for organizations that maybe they didn't have to pay for as much in the past, but they are finding themselves having to do so now. Many of those things are essentially wiped out when you bring in a 4-day week, because what you are doing is you are tipping the balance back to a more sustainable form of well-being for people in the first place. You're not grinding them to a halt so that they actually need to exit work because they're sick. You're stopping it before it becomes a problem. So suddenly, you're thinking automatically, I can cut some of those costs. Second, organizations are always looking at ways to improve their productivity of their workforce. But what they often really struggle to understand is that you can't make people more productive unless you can motivate them to want to be more productive. And things like Lean Six Sigma and, agile ways of working, why would I do them if I know I'm just going to be guaranteed more work after it? Whereas by putting a time limit on something and then leveraging those sort of methodologies, people can, know that they're achieving an outcome and they're being rewarded for that through time off as the gift. So motivation and understanding the really science of motivation is, I think, critical to, revolutionizing how we work. Organizations spend huge amounts of money on finance transformation, on technology transformation, and they're not getting the full return of investment because they're not investing in human resource transformation. And ultimately, businesses are run by people.
Yeah. And, it's interesting the way that you have to approach it, which I think is obviously the best way, is because productivity is so rooted in quantity as opposed to quality. The easy solve is, well, just work more, or let's put a system in. But to your point, and this happens, you're right, this happens a lot when I talk to people, like, oh, we've just implemented, we're using this new tool and it's supposed to make us more productive, but we're struggling with learning it, or everyone's using it a bit differently, or this person won't use it at all. And then it becomes, there is that friction there. And speaking of friction, when you go into organizations, there's the cultural friction needs to be probably something to take into account as well. I can tell you that, I watched this documentary, we'll link to it in the show notes, called Time Thieves. It was largely based in Europe. And one of the things that they kind of got into was the way that the work day is in Spain, for example. And this is a few years old, so it may have changed, but they were trying to put a time law in place to allow, the Spanish people to go to work a more reasonable or reasoned way, because what they had adopted essentially was the way that the Third Reich operated. so we're talking, 80 years ago, when that stuff, 80 plus years ago, when they would go to work, they would take a break, and often they would work till 10 p.m., right? Like that you would see that, especially with knowledge workers and so on and so forth. So Japan's another one, right? There was a whole instance about Japan and how it's interesting that they can have a word that symbolizes to live up to your purpose and have a whole formula for that. But they also have a hotline because there's a term that's a literal word for death by overwork, right? So there's these dissonances culturally. How do you go in? Is it working different date? You have to say to these organizations, hey, it doesn't have to be like you all work the same 4 days. Like you can stagger it. Like, how do you approach that? I know you've said that the organization has, people working in all five different continents, I believe you said. So how do you navigate that? Because that's got to be an issue.
I think you can talk about culture for days. If you think about, national cultures and working cultures within different nations, what we try and do is we don't have all the answers to that. So that's why we aim to run as many pilot studies in as many different countries to understand those nuances. We have national partners there who end up giving us a lot of context, which can be really useful. So take, for example, we will be having a pilot in Norway this year, but Norway is in a completely different space to the trial that we will be holding in, Germany at the moment. Well, maybe not Germany, but maybe, Brazil. It's like we're going to see stark differences in how organizations implement their own 4-day weeks. And also we might see variances with regards to the successful actual implementation of it. That's what we did find in the South African pilot results relative to some of the Western country results. South Africans didn't take the same day off every week. there was much more, you know, flexibility on the day in which they took their day off. And actually on their time off, they took off more side hustles, which we didn't see in the Western country results. So I think, and in some instances, we will be looking at maybe not a 4-day week, but actually getting people down to a 5-day week. And, you know, some workplaces are working 50 hours a week, but that 180-100 principle might get them down to 42. And that, you know, would be ultimately a success for us in that instance. The second thing, I suppose, is looking at the sector that they're in as well. So people often think, well, a 4-day week works well in an office setting, but how the hell would that work in healthcare or in manufacturing or all of those sort of things? And sometimes it's about digging into some of the, you know, practices. So you take healthcare, for example. My own background was in healthcare. It's perpetually under-resourced and everyone is tired and burned out. And actually a 4-day week there in many instances might need to look like, well, we need to invest more in staff recruitment in order to allow all staff then to take a 4-day week. So we actually need to hire more staff in order to give everyone a 4-day week. But when we look at the net or the cost benefit analysis of that, we suddenly aren't having to use agency staff as much. So we've actually reduced our cost overall. And that's an example from Iceland. As you say, other organizations don't want to close businesses for a day. And that's why we say, well, there is no one size fits all 4-day week. So some may have Monday to Thursday, others Tuesday to Friday. If you have peaks and troughs in your workload, apply the 4-day week across a month period. So actually, if you need all your staff in, you know, 5 days a week, end of financial year, give them time in lieu then, you know, to reconcile with that. So we've seen loads of different ways in which innovative companies in different sectors and different cultures have gone about reducing their working hours. What we always say is that you as a manager and a leader don't have to have all the answers. In fact, you hire such talented workers and you put them through such a rigorous interview process. It's time to start unlocking some of that potential and asking them to provide some of the solutions, because ultimately they're going to know how to reduce their working hours in a way that makes sure that they meet their business needs. And I think what happens there is you are finally building a really critical thing. What we need in the world of work is trust. When you have management that doesn't trust their workforce, all bad things happen.
Right.
It's fully toxic. You're creating trust between management and non-management for a collective benefit here.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
when you started this project, this global movement, really, it seems to me that it is a daunting mission because you're trying to undo what's been, you know, kind of widely accepted for, like you said, 100 years, decades, and in varying degrees, in varying cultures. Like, there's no, like you pointed out, there's no one size fits all for the solution, but also the problem is not a one size fits all problem either. And then when we talk about people's circadian rhythms, you know, me as a night owl, there's early risers, you know, we talk about meetings, one of the best times, like there's, time is such a personal thing. It's really, even in business, even when business isn't personal, like productivity always is, right? But time, the way we experience time is differentiates from person to person to person. What keeps you going with this venture? Because it's, I mean, it's akin to, you know, trying to fight back against the whole, like, everyone should become a morning person because that's the only way you can be productive. But there's these night owls that are biologically wired to not be that way. And by actually having them fight their body clock, they are being less productive overall. And, you know, again, there's no one size fits all there. So what keeps you going in this direction when you know it's a very daunting task?
That's an interesting question. I've never been asked. What drives my purpose in this is that we're getting to see real life bridging of research to practice. And my previous life was in academia. I did my PhD on burnout in healthcare workers. And so what I always used to find really exhausting was that I would be producing mass amounts of research saying, this is a big problem. If we don't do something, we're all going to end up in a very bad place. And you're speaking to the void because you're only speaking to the academic community. In this movement, there's something very special in the sense that we're able to work with academic partners in Boston and Cambridge and Stellenbosch and Munster and create research in a very live way and then produce that and showcase that and incorporate it into like our business and our offerings. So the rapid pace of which the conversation has grown is what drives me essentially. When I was involved, you know, with the Irish campaign 2 years ago, and this is only 2 years ago, the narrative and the conversation we were having all the time was this will never work, full stop. When the UK results came out this time last year was, okay, this may work in professional services, but this won't work in XXX. And so every time I'm provided with the barrier, I come up with the solution. So that's why we actively seek out, you know, how will this work in healthcare? How will this work in manufacturing? How will this work in, you know, billable by hour systems? So we can constantly refute those sort of cases. What's also really nice is that this is such a big movement and it's something that I feel like 40 week in many instances, everyone actually wants it.
Yeah.
What they're scared of is actually doing it and what the negative impact of that might be. And I think it's just about trying to manage some of those, you know, those fears that people have that are very much ingrained in a different type of work. So I get to really, yeah, I enjoy all of that. And that's probably what motivates me the most in keeping this conversation going.
Well, and I think the point that you've made, which is everybody wants this, they just don't know how to get it with a level of certainty that they're comfortable with. I think that's the key, sure. Right? Is the uncertainty. And the approach, as we've shared through this conversation, if you can get data, like empirical, like data that, you know, if you can find that one thing that trips an organization, like, oh, really? Well, we can save all these costs here, which means that, you know, we have happier workers, which means et cetera. It's like the kind of the snowball or the domino effect there. Then that's the tricky part is the hitting the quantity piece so that the quality piece can really shine through. So you're measuring the proper things. Before I let you go, if you were to speak to a leader like what's one of the first things you would say to someone who's looking at doing this? They're curious. They're skeptical but curious. And they're like, well, we've always worked this way, but I'm noticing that my, you know, we're seeing increased sick calls. We're seeing, you know, our morale is down. You know, we've got people, we need some people to come back into the office, but not all of them, or they want to come in a couple days a week. Like, we're trying to navigate this, and we think this is a good way to go. What would be one of the first steps that you would ask them to take, or one of the first things that you would look for them to do to kind of start to embrace this idea of the four-day week?
Yeah, I mean, my first thing would probably be making them realize that repeating the same thing over and over again and not getting different results, you know, is madness. So if you want to try and get a solution to a problem that you can't get a resolution to, you need to think outside the box. And we need to do a hell of a lot more of that in this world that we're heading into now in the rapid pace at which it's going. So while the three words, 4 day a week, might terrify you, mm-hmm. as it does many business leaders, open up underneath the hood and actually see what it's all about. Read about, it's not as simple as reducing working hours. It is actually an experiment in completely redesigning how people approach their work, how we measure performance in work, and how we can actually create a more sustainable workforce, which can ultimately lead to more sustainable communities and sustainable societies. My essentially place doubt on everything and don't restrict yourself so much to the confines just because everyone else is doing it. That would be my main thing. The fundamental change required in order to get organizations across the line is leaders willing to embrace a new way of working. And placing trust in their staff in that process. So this is top-down enabled, but bottom-up designed in many instances. And you unlock such a potential within your workforce by doing something like that. There was a really good book I read before by Dan Heath called Upstream. And it talks about we are so much in reactive mode all the time. We are picking the bodies out of the river downstream and wondering, you know, are we ever going to get to the end of this? And instead, we need to carve out time to actually go upstream and see why the bodies are falling in the first place. And if we can stop that, then we can stop the, you know, the downstream work. And that's essentially what we're trying to do with the four-day week, is actually try and get the root cause issues that are causing organizations to not perform to the best of their ability through using Parkinson's law, reducing working hours, and forcing all of those organizational issues to rise their ugly heads. And as a result, because we are creating a culture where people are collaborating and working with each other to resolve these issues, we actually are able to, you know, create a much more predictive workforce where there's a lot more certainty and people can have a lot more autonomy over their time as a result of that.
It is interesting to me that a lot of the change that we need to do, we need to go back further and go deeper into places that either are well-heeled or well-rooted, you know, either because we've seen other people do it or we expect it, or we just feel like it's so far gone that, again, it's like I'd rather buy new Christmas lights than untangle the ones that I have that I keep putting away every year. Oh, there's a bulb that broke. Well, let's just throw out the whole thing instead of going through, because it just seems so daunting. Would you advise? Well, yeah, no, go ahead. Yeah, I want to hear some of the, because I see this all the time when I'm saying, hey, you know, you need to theme your days. There's no way I could theme my day. I'm like, well, yeah, we do that though. Like if you, when do you do your housework? Oh, you know, I do it on Saturday. Well, when do you go grocery shopping? Saturday. So Saturday's like your household day. Yeah, I do. Oh, yeah, you're already kind of doing it. We're just asking you to name it. And then you can filter your focus and attention on those things on Saturday as opposed to on Monday when the light bulb burns out in your kitchen and you're like, oh, well, there's still another light bulb, but I should replace this right now instead of, you know, going down and using the treadmill or doing something that's more important or prevalent that's going to get me to where I want to go. It's hard. It's really, it's that human behavior part to be willing to take the time to untangle as opposed to just go, you know what, screw it. We're just going to either keep going or we're going to, you know, get this new tool that will do all the work for us, which, you know, as somebody who, I mean, in our earlier episode, we'll link to Francesco's episode, apps, you know, garbage in, garbage out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we have just like But apps as like the rubber band over what are gaping wounds in, you know, our organizations at the moment. And organizations are so willing to jump the mark on buying a new software, buying a new productivity tool, you know, a new finance tool or whatever it is in order to try and improve efficiencies within their work. And constantly they're facing the same challenges of people saying, I don't have enough time. I'm exhausted, you know, stop putting this on me. And we just kind of ignore that. Collectively, we're like, oh God, aren't we all, you know? Let's just stop doing that. Yeah. Let's just actually say, maybe it's not that we don't have enough time. Maybe it's that we're using that time unwisely, and be much more deliberate about what type of work we do when. And that's what you see in 4-day work week organizations. They are designing their work week in order to drive outcome-based performance. So they will focus on individual deep flow work periods, and they will have dedicated time for collaboration. There's none of this, you know, what we have now, this blurring of people constantly being contactable at all times. And therefore, the single most important resource, their attention and focus, is being constantly diverted in a million directions. And so that is what I say, is that if you actually, if you want to make any sort of change in performance of your workers, we need to be much more deliberate in understanding how to improve individuals' attentions and be honest with yourself as a leader. If I implement this tool, is it going to make me more productive? Probably not. Because what I need actually is to have dedicated time to do the work that I need to do, reduce my meeting hours, you know, be more deliberate in forms of communication. They're the sort of things. And lastly, I think we have this, the world of business is really bad at this, where we talk so much about it's so important to have these non-transferable skills of, you know, being a good leader, being a good communicator, a good collaborator. We haven't a clue how to be any of those things. And the people that we think are good in many instances are just stuck in that old paradigm as well. So we really need to drill down and see, well, what does good collaboration look like? And because many of us don't know what good looks like, we often, you know, think we're doing a good job when actually we could be doing a lot better.
Dale, this has been a great conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. Where can people keep up with you and the work that you're doing?
So our organization is 4-Day Week Global. So you can check out our website. We'll be running 2 global pilot studies starting in March and in September, both English speaking. And in September as well, we'll also have many other languages happening as well. If you're not interested in actually engaging in a 6-month pilot, we have a foundation course where you can learn more about actually how to do a 4-day week yourself. And also just check out our resources online. If you're an individual looking to try and make the business case to your boss or to your, you know, your manager, there are some resources there that can help you build that argument.
Dale, thanks so much for having a productive conversation with me today.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks to Dale for joining me on the program today. You can check out all of the relevant show notes, links, all that fun stuff by going to productivityist.com/podcast523, or just look wherever you're getting your podcasts, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Show notes are right there as well. By the way, when you are looking at this podcast or listening to this podcast, wherever you are, subscribe to the show. It helps make the show better because I can then see ratings and reviews and all that fun stuff, any kind of engagement you can do. But also it makes it better for you because you can find shows that have been presented, the over 500 or so that have been presented to date, 520 plus actually, 10 years in, easily able to search through the archives, and you won't miss a single episode either. So subscribe to the show. Ratings and reviews are also appreciated as well. Another thing you can do to support the show is check out the sponsors you heard during today's podcast interview. Just go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to check them out. Anything resonate with you, click on the link. That way they know that we sent you. That's it for this episode. We'll be back with another episode next week. This one is going to be one that is out of the vault. An episode that I really enjoyed. A lengthier one, but one I know you'll enjoy. So I hope you'll join me for that. Until then, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.